start some good class. I really didn't want to sit in some good class for too long.
Right.
Well, really? So let's go straight to the simcha class. Simcha class is the simcha about Brecha. So obviously, the advantage for learning simcha class right now, I mean, in general, is that it's very, very nogea l'maisa. And the second advantage is that it's largely chazara, because we discussed a lot of these issues already, as with a lot of things in Torah, but we discussed a lot of these issues in Basar B'Challah, because we already spoke about putting Basar B'Challah in the same oven. I don't remember how detailed we got into that discussion, but we certainly discussed it. So this is what it's all based on. It's all based on the sugya of Recha that appears in Simon Kochas. So the question of Recha Milsa is a puzzling question, because there is not a sugya in Shas, there are two sugyas in Shas. So you'd expect, if there are two sugyas in Shas about the same Shaila, and there's a machlokas in each sugya in Shas, you'd expect there would be the same Amoraim that argue about the issues. But yeah, in one sugya in Shas we have machlokas by Rava, and the other sugya in Shas we have machlokas between Rav and Levi. And that is somewhat positive, right? I mean, you would imagine that if it's all the same issue, it's all Recha Milsa, so why would you have two different sugyas in Shas? So if you look at just like the basic format of the simon, Se'ifim, Aleph, and Gimel are about cooking two foods or roasting two foods simultaneously in the same oven. And it's intuitive that when you have something in an oven, that there's going to be a certain reyach, there's going to be a certain aroma that comes from the food. We thank God again for demonstrating that there's going to be, yeah, you got it. There's going to be some reyach that comes from food. That's how part of the way our taste buds work is through reyach. So obviously, when food is heated up, there's going to be reyach, and reyach can have some sort of impact on the other food. We're also going to have to keep in mind that there's another concept that Rama brings up over here called Zeya, which is a different concept but needs to be dealt with as well when we're talking about cooking things in the same oven. So in our in Simon Kof Chaz, our primary topic, of course, is not only about Recha but about Recha of kosher and non-kosher, that the non-kosher reyach affects the kosher food. Obviously, in basar b'challah, it wasn't so much about kosher and non-kosher, it was about not just basar and challah, but basar and parim, or challah and parim. And what does that do? And we're going to come back, the Rama's going to mention that over here as well, about if you have a parim of food that was heated in the same oven as a fleshik of food, so what does that do to the power of food? Mamash just got a shayla about it last night. Someone said that they were heating up Shabbos leftovers that were fleshik together with the power of food. They ate it with rice or something. They then ate the rice, so they want to know if they can eat the rice with milchid, with the milchid meal, can they eat the rice and then have milchid right after that, all those kinds of things. So that is our sugya of Recha. Then there's another sugya about which is sifhei, and where the Shulchan Aruch talks about being shoev bepiv reyach yayin nesach gerach neket, meaning to actually imbibe the reyach. Meaning it's not that you're eating food that the reyach affected from another food that the reyach affected this food. No, you're just going straight for the reyach. You're being shoev bepiv something that is asabachinah. And that smelling something that's less about, no, like wine that's fermenting in a barrel, and typically expert winemakers would smell the wine that's fermenting in a barrel in order to be able to get a sense of where the wine is in the process and how fine the wine is going to be, or things like that. So that also is an issue of Recha. Another example of such a case would be smelling chametz b'pesach. Right, that if the person is, if you have something that's asbana, do we assume Recha Milsa and therefore it's Misrana, or Recha Lav Milsa? So if we're Mutabana, Lechora, it should be no Shaila, although we'll discuss that as well. Right, when you have Machalos Asuros that are not Isure Hana'a, Lechora, that's not subject to Recha Milsa in terms of smelling directly. It would only be subject to Recha Milsa from the Sif Aleph through Gimel perspective of the Reyach affecting another food. So we would think again that those two issues, the issue of smelling something that is asur b'ana, and the issue of a reach of a non-kosher food affecting a kosher food, that misvara, they have no connection to each other. Misvara, they're completely separate issues, right? Because they're two completely separate actions and two different, completely different ways of relating to the issur. And there's some, and one is about Yisurei Anah, one is about regular Yisurei Achila. So you would think that the two are not at all connected. The problem is that the Gemara in both places, in Pesach Mayimbad and Nabal Dizar Asarachbav, the Gemara in both places uses that same terminology. Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa. And in both places there's a Machlokas, whether Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa. So that gives you the impression that maybe they're similar. So again, on the one hand, it's the same terminology, there's a Machlokas about both. On the other hand, it's different Amorim that are arguing about it, and it's the cases themselves don't seem to be super comparable to each other. So this is a machlokas we showed him exactly how to deal with this. Tosas and Avodah Zarah Daf Samachav and Beis says that the two sugyas are not connected to each other. The language of Recha Milsa is used, but in both places, but it means different things. And that's not so crazy, as we've often heard. Rav Shachman loves to give the example of Chazaka, that the word Chazaka means five different things throughout Shas, and just because it's the same word that's used in different places in Shas, it doesn't mean at all that it means the same thing. Sometimes that's one of the mitos Shatorah Shebal Peh Nidreshes Peh. That if you want to learn Torah Shebal Peh, you have to know that sometimes you'll have a similar phrase that means totally different things, and sometimes you have different phrases that actually mean the same thing. So Recha Milsa would be such an example, according to Tosfos in the sense of Avodah Zarah. There is a little bit of a problem, because in the sugya in Avodah Zarah, when it goes through Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa, it brings some of the same examples of the sugya in Pesach Mevrid, meaning the core case is a different case, but some of those same examples come up. So Tosfos tries to work around that. He tries to figure out how they're not really connected with each other. There are two reasons to distinguish between the sugyas. First of all, in Pesachim, the issue is about Reach creating Tarobes, and in Avodah Zarah, it's got nothing to do with Tarobes. It's just about, like we said, directly going for the Reach. And second, that the Recha of wine is not something that benefits a person, really. It's strong and it's harmful to a person, while the Trefa Recha in Pesachim enhanced, we assume, is an enhancement of the food. So it is possible, what Tosfos is driving at, it is possible that you can paskin one way in terms of Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa in one sugya, and the other way in the other sugya. And we have a vested interest in doing so. We have a vested interest in paskin one way in one sugya and the other way in the other sugya. Why? Because in one sugya it's a machlokas, in the sechs level, the zar it's machlokas, Abaye and Rava. And Rava holds Recha Lav Milsa. And we know that Allah is always like Rava, except for Yal Kigam. And Yal Kigam, there's no ration there at all. So this obviously is not one of the Yal Kigam. So we're going to pass it like Rava, or we would want to pass it like Rava, that Recha's Lav Milsa. But in Pesachim, it's Machlokas, Rav and Levi. We generally pass it like Rav against Levi. And Rav holds Recha Milsa in Maseches Pesachim. So how could it be that when we're passing like Rav, that Recha Milsa, when we're passing like Rava, that Recha Lav Milsa, it's a stira in Psak. Just by following the Klalei HaPsak, it's a stira in Psak. So the Tov says, no, it's not a stira. Follow the regular Klalei HaPsak, and you're perfectly fine. When it comes to Hilchas Tarobes, which you have in Sechas Psachim, we're going to pass in Recha Milsa. When it comes to smelling wine, which is not a din in Hilchas Tarobes, we're going to pass in Recha Lav Milsa. That is Shitas Hatosis. Rashi says, no, there are two Klalim in Psak, but these Klalim are not of equal strength. Right, Hilsa Karava, Sepriyal Kigam, is a very, very strong Klal of Psak, meaning we've clearly identified all of the exceptions, and there are no more exceptions than that. So that's a very ironclad kind of Klal of Psak. But when you say Halacha Karav Mechavero, which is the Klal that we're working with over here, that Halacha is like Rav against Lady, because the Halacha is like Rav Mechavero, that's not such an ironclad Klal. That's generally speaking, the Halacha is like Rav Mechavero. It's not such a strong rule. So the rule that we pass in like Rava is the dominant rule, and therefore Recha Lav Milsa, not only in the Sechs of Observer, it's the same Achlokas, and in the Sechs of Pesach, when we talk about Tarav, it's also going to be Recha Lav Milsa. And in fact, the Rif and the Rambam Paskin, even in Ilchus Tarovos, Recha is Lav Milsa, presumably because they're assuming, like Rashi, that it's that Reach is Reach, and it's the same Achlokas, and we Paskin like Rava, and therefore Recha Lav Milsa, that we do not have to worry about Reach at all, which would, if we stop right there, would make this Simon very simple and very easy, right? But those are two very extreme shitas. We have the shita of Tosos, then Hilchos Tarovos, Recha Milsa, and we have the shita of Rashi, then Hilchos Tarovos, Recha is Lav Milsa. The Gemara in Pesachim talks about baking bread and meat in the same oven at the same time, and says you can't eat that bread with milchik. And Rashi writes, yeah, but that's a brisa. That's assuming Recha Milsa. We paskin Recha Lav Milsa. And Tulsa says, no, that's a brisa that assumes Kehalacha, that Recha Milsa. Therefore, we have to worry about that brisa. The Rif is confusing. Meaning, you see that brisa, and you say, oh yeah, of course, that's going to be subject to this machlokas, Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa. The Rif paskins, like we said, similar to Rashi, the Recha Lav Milsa. And again, according to Rashi, you have to learn that brisa, Shalok HaLacha. And yet, the Rif brings that brisa. The Rif still quotes that brisa, that if you bake meat and oven in the same, meat and bread in the same oven, at the same time, that the bread may not be eaten with milchik. The bread is now considered to be flesh of bread that you're not allowed to eat with milchik. Not flesh of bread that you're not allowed to eat at all, we'll get to that, but flesh of bread that you're not allowed to eat with milchik. Well, wait a second, flesh of bread that you're not allowed to eat with milchik, that sounds like Recha Milsa. So there are two mahalchim over here in terms of the Shita Sarif. It could be that we're mechalik between Lechakila and Bidiyavet. That really, lahalacha meikra din li paskin Recha Lav Milsa. But lechakila, we're machmir that Recha Milsa. How do we define lechakila? So we're kind of building out the gather of lechakila a little bit over here. Normally, lechakila means, should you do this? And the evidence is, now that I've done it, do I have to assume it happened? Right? So over here, you already baked the bread with meat. So I would have thought that would be considered bidyeved. But no, what we're perhaps saying is that so long as you haven't yet eaten that bread, and you have the ability to eat that bread with your pastrami sandwich, they'll slice it for you on the same table that they prepare the meats and coleslaw. They'll slice that bread for you, and they'll make a nice pastrami, nice hot pastrami sandwich for you on that bread. So let's use that. Why do you have to use that bread to have cheese? You don't have to make your grilled cheese with that bread, and therefore that's still considered the chakila. So that's why we say not to eat it with cheese. That shita, that approach, is referred to on the page in the Beragola in Os Aleph, who says like the Rambam, and he says, Ukedasa Rif Rabu Shevi Per Zayin Dechulin Plukta the Rabu Levi Vupsachim Dafayim Vav. That it's the same machlokas that the Rabu Levi Abu Psachim Dafayim Vav. Upasa Kalevi the Recha Lav Milsahi, and we pass the Gravy like Levi Recha Lav Milsa, meaning like Levi, which is also Rava, that Recha Lav Milsa. Ulechachila aser, but lechachila it's going to be aser. V'diyek lat saloka amar v'loka amar tzolim. V'chenkas v'tur b'shem Rashi v'baha. So even though Recha Lav Milsa were makna lechachila for Recha Milsa. That's one mahalik in the Rif. The other way to understand it is that in Mitzius, Recha is a thing, right? Meaning for sure there's a Mitzius called Recha. The question is it subject to bittul? Meaning, do we assume that the reach is so minuscule that it will become batel in the other item? So since Recha Lav Milsa is really another way of saying that reach is automatically batel, that the reach is so minuscule and so tiny that it's automatically batel, so it's going to have to conform to the halachos of bittul. So if you have something that cannot become batel for whatever reason, ayin, the beginning of Hilchos Tarobas, about all the things that cannot become batel, right? We had several simanim in a row about things that cannot become batel. Well, then such things are not going to be subject to the kula of Reichel Av Milsa. Because Reichel is a thing, it's an entity, but it's just that Reichel Av Milsa is another way of saying Reichel is really batel. So if you have a davar sheyesh lo matirin, that's not going to be subject to recha lav milsa. Any time the bread can be eaten with parah, can be eaten with meat, there's no need to rely on bittul of the fleishik tam to say that you should eat it with cheese, because that's considered a davar sheyesh lo matirin. So those are the two mahalchim in the rift. So again, the you have a brisa that says you cook meat and bread together, you bake meat and bread together in the same oven, that you should not eat that bread with cheese. So one simple mahalich in the brisa is to say that brisa is shalok halacha. We paskin recha lav milsa. That's Rashi. The other mahalich is Tosfos. We absolutely paskin recha milsa, and this brisa is kehalacha. Then you have the Rif, who's somewhere in between. He paskins Reichel Lav Milsa, but he still paskins this Brisa. How can he do that? So either because he holds, yes, Reichel Lav Milsa, that's true, or no, Reichel Lav Milsa. Reichel's Lav Milsa, but that's true, b'diavad, but the Chachila, we try to be machmir for Reichel Milsa, or we're assuming that Reicha is subject to bittul. That when we say Reicha lav milsa, we're saying that it's really that the Reach, which is a thing that exists, just becomes bittul. The Ran on the Rif says, yeah, you could paskin Reicha lav milsa and still hold with this brisa that if you bake bread and meat in the same oven, that bread may not be eaten with cheese. The meat also may not be eaten with cheese, but that bread may not be eaten with cheese. And the Ran says for two reasons. He says, first of all, maybe meat and bread is different. Meaning the classic case of the sugya in Pesachim, which is the Hilchos Tarobas case, is you have treif meat and you have kosher meat. And we're going to get into, right, Shulchan Aruch starts getting into details. Kachush and shamein, and meaning words kachush, what does that mean? So you have treifa meat, you have kosher meat, things that have similar tastes to each other. So the reyach of one, is not going to be so detectable in the other one. But if you have a reyach of meat that makes its way into lechem, into bread, so that's already very nicker, because meat and bread don't taste the same at all. So they're like a mimishen amino, and in such a case, you can say reicha milsa, similar to the svara, but not exactly the same thing, because we're only dealing with reyach over here, as to why it is that min bimino should only require rov, and mimishen amino should require a shishin on a daraisa level. So similar type of svara, if you assume that way, right? Not like the shi'ur of Yudah min bimino is also mashu, that it always enhances and runs the whole svara. But a similar idea to the concept that if you assume min bimino on a daraisa level is bakal b'rov, and min b'shein amino requires shishim, what's the svara? Is that when something is clearly recognizable and clearly detectable, it's going to be a much bigger problem. So over here, from a reyach perspective, you can't deny the reality of reyach. You can't deny you can't deny your own taste buds. You can't deny your own sense of smell. But by the meat, you're not going to notice it at all. And since it's not a mamashlis, it's not a real tarobes, so we can paskin reicha lav milsa. That's something the Ran quotes as a hava amina. The Ran rejects that mahalik. But the Ran first develops that mahalik, and then he rejects it. So two pieces of meat are cooked together, reicha lav milsa. Dafka, the brisa talks about meat and bread. Yeah, so by the bread, you're going to have to worry that reicha milsa. Then the Ran suggests, no, we paskin reicha lav milsa. But when it comes to basa b'chalav, we have to play by different rules. We have to be extra machmir for reicha. And he says it's only a chumrah. Meik radin reicha lav milsa. And the right is that the brisa only said not to eat the bread with milk. It didn't say that the bread is anyway inherently treif because it's flesh of a bread. Right? Meaning, if you really, 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 really held that reicha milsa, then fleishik of bread is treif. That was what's in Sadivav, that you have a fleishik of bread, that's no good. You can't have milk and bread, you can't have fleishik of bread. So that would be absolutely treif, that would be no good. So says the Ran, it's a raya that really reicha lav milsa. And we're just being matter, it comes to basmachalo. Okay, so don't have your quasi fleishik of bread together with cheese. What's the Ran's Raya? The Ran's Raya, again, is why don't we just say it's awesome because it's pleasure for bread. Now, let's say you're the Riv, right? You held that that case of the bread, we're going to pass it in Mahalacha, La'alacha, Mikra Din La'alacha, even though you hold Rech Halav Nusa. So does that Raya bother you in any way? Is that Raya going to be a problem for you? Is the fact that the Fleshik of bread is not really Fleshik, is that going to be a problem? Well, the first approach of the Riv was that Rech Halav Nusa B'diyavim. Right, meaning even though Recha is Milsa L'Chachila, we Machmir L'Chachila, but Recha La Milsa B'diavad. So once the bread is made, you certainly don't need to throw it out. So he's not going to be bothered that it's not kosher, because from a non-kosher perspective, it's B'diavad already. And if you say like the first Malach in the Rif, again, two Malach in the Rif, first Malach in the Rif was that Recha La Milsa B'diavad, but L'Chachila R'Choshish Recha Milsa. So vis-a-vis flation bread, it's a b'diavad already. You already baked it. The case was you already baked it together with the meat. So it's a b'diavad. To call it flation of bread means you're going to have to throw it out. That's a b'diavad. So for that, you'll say mechalav milsa. But I want to eat it with cheese. That's the chalchila. So we're not going to let you eat it with cheese because you're not allowed to do something. That's a chalchila. As far as the Riff's second approach, so what was the Riff's second approach? And it's negotiation of material and it's not batal. That really recha is an entity, it exists, but it becomes batel. And Recha La Milsa is just another way of saying that it's batel. But when you're dealing with something that can't become batel, like a Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, so then you're going to say Recha Milsa. So if you treat it like a Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, if you're going to have to throw out the bread, then it's not Yesh Lo Matirin. Meaning if you're going to label it Fleshka Bread, you're going to say that, so that's not Yesh Lo Matirin, that's Fleshka Bread, that's going to be Aser. So therefore, I'm not going to be bothered by the fact that we allow the bread, that the bread is going to be kosher. So that Raya that the Ran brings is not going to bother the Riff. Meaning the Riff remains fully intact, with keeping in mind the factor that the Gemara didn't trafe up this bread, that the Gemara never said that the bread itself was trafe. The Raya Lechora does pose a problem for Tosfos, though, because Tosfos says that we actually paskin Recha Milsa, and the bread is flesh, right? Meaning Tosfos is the one that said, look, the two sugas of Recha have nothing to do with each other. And when it comes to Chastar Rovas, Recha Milsa, Lechatila, B'dievan, everything, we paskin Recha Milsa. And Haraya, we have a price that says if you bake bread together with meat, that the bread is going to be, you're not allowed to eat that bread with cheese, so you see the Recha Milsa. So now, if you're Tosfos, you're going to have to say, well, wait a second, why isn't the bread trafe? I mean, if we really hold Recha Milsa, then the bread is actually fleshed, so then it should be trafe. Why can it be, you know, only not be eaten with milchik? Why stop short of saying that it's not a trafe? So the Shach and Sivkat Yad Aleph deal with this, right? The Shach and Sivkat Yad Aleph. If you look at the bottom line of that Ramah, or this is the Shulchan, from the bottom line of that Ramah, who adin imafu b'chei agavna pas in basar, asu lo achlo b'chala. That if you bake pas with basar, you're not allowed to eat it with chala. And the shas of Pekin Aleph, haynu b'pas muat, o sheyesh heker b'pas. So what does he do? He says, chaz robesim tzadikav, that not every milk bread is trade. Not every flesh of bread is trade. Says the shop, you ever hear of a Thomas's English muffin? Right? Meaning that you have all these that they're made in these tiny little round shapes, so it's just a pas muat, and they're made in a funny shape, it's made in a muffin shape, not like the shape of normal bread. You cut it open, it doesn't slice normally, it like gets all choppy and stuff. So it's different, it's regular, it's different than regular bread is. So it's pas muat, or if it's meruba, there's a hacker. Aval, the pas meruba vein hacker, essentially what the Shach says is, in hachi nami, that if you hold Recha Milsa, then in hachi nami, this bread is going to be not just something you can't eat with milk, it's going to be trade, unless you come out with a way to avoid the issues of Sim Sadiqa. Good. It's interesting, you know, we have all this discussion Recha Milsa, Recha Lav Milsa, as far as like some baking the same oven, because that happens to be the example of the transference of Reyach that the Gemara gives. The question is that just the example, or is that like the way it happens? The only, meaning the cases the Gemara has. you put a hot piece of bread on top of a wine barrel, right? And it's showing somehow the tam of the yayin into, or the reyach of the yayin into that piece of bread. Or you bake two things in the same oven together. You know, or plus obviously the case that you have in Avodah Zarah smelling the yayin. What if reyach were to transfer some other way? Now, sometimes you go to a frozen kosher supermarket, and the people that do the bagging, you know, it used to be that they would give plastic bags, but I guess whatever. So now, if you pay the 25 cents for the whatever it is that they charge them, or nothing. So for the people that fill up the bag, some of them say they're very careful. If you buy a thing of milk, they'll wrap the milk separately than they will the meat. They're not going to put them in the same bag. They don't want to be walking out with basar b'chalav in the same bag. Is there an issue to have basar b'chalav in the same bag? Again, you know, if you read the book, it doesn't really seem that it's an issue to have basar b'chalav in the same bag. But, you know, industry standard, you know, would seem that it would at least make people uncomfortable. I just got a text right before Shir. A guy said to me that his wife was baking hamantashen. In the mitzvah sayom, right? So she's baking hamantashen, and it said that normally his plastic container that he holds his coffee beans in, he doesn't just do strong coffee. You know, he has coffee beans that he grinds up as he makes it fresh. And so every Pesach he has a fight with his wife, like the many households. That he says that he wants to there's no reason to get a new container. It only holds coffee beans the whole year. So he said, we'll just wipe it out and it's fine. We'll rinse it out, wipe it out, soap, and that's it. We'll use the same container. We don't need a new container for my coffee beans. She was making hamantashen. He left his coffee bean container on the counter, and some flour got into his coffee bean container. And she said, you see, I'm right. So don't fight with me this year when I tell you that you need a new coffee bean container, because flour can get into the coffee bean container. Elamai, if you actually learn the book, right, you could still just rinse it with soap and water and cold flour that went into the coffee bean container. You could still rinse it, but no, you don't say that. You know, it's Rabbi Eisman has an expression, Yesh lahakal shalom b'fanah. You know, like, you can only make a shalom b'fanah. So the Aruch HaShulchan discusses, what if Reyach transfers in some other way? What does it mean Reyach transfers? He says, you have some really strong, powerful odor to a meat, a thing of salami, right? And it's in the same bag as your part of the food. So if you have to be mashmir, that you buy a bunch of rolls and you put a thing of salami in there and you put it in the same bag and you close the bag and you come home and then you decide, you know, you want one of those rolls, you want to eat with you forgot one of your kids is vegetarian or something for a week or something, so you know, they only want cream cheese, they're not interested in the salami. So if you put cream cheese on the roll. So there are, this is a question. If you could smell it, if the roll, meaning if it's something that's clearly detectable to you, then of course it's milsa. The whole discussion of recha milsa, recha lav milsa is a question of malchus. But if it's mitzius, you know that you're sensing the reya, then avada it's recha milsa. Then for sure you should. It's quite chiddush. No, you would think that the cases of Shulchan Aruch are the cases in the Gemara. That's how reya transfers. And if it's not one of those cases, that's not how reya transfers. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, you can't deny what you're tasting. So if you can taste it, then for sure you need to be machmir about it. Which brings us back to the air up bottle, right? Meaning if you're tasting the water, and you mamish, you can't deny what you're tasting. So how can you just say, recha lav milsa? So the reason Rabbi Narsh was machmir on it was that he said, was not because you can't, not because the Aruch HaShulchan, he just said, because look, chachilu, we masked recha milsa. You're not allowed to taste the recha of something. So why is it that Rav Shechter was mekel? So just to chazer over, the reason Rav Shechter was mekel was because he held that the case is not even the case of recha. Because the way it works is that the reach does not get embedded into the food. The way it works is at the same time that you're drawing in the water through the straw, you're also drawing in a very pungent air at the same time into your mouth. And your brain convinces you that the water tastes like that pungent air, because how could you ever tell the difference when you're drawing it into your mouth at the same time? But if you do the experiment that my daughter did, where you can suck up the water from the air up bottle, and then you spit it into a cup, and then you drink it again, it tastes like nothing. It tastes like regular water when you drink it the second time, because the water has not, in fact, been affected by the ray. It's just that it took me a lot of convincing to get her to do that, but the water, she said, why don't you do it? I said, because I don't know if it's kosher. But the water doesn't taste like anything, so it's not actually impacted, and therefore that's why Rav Shapta thought it was mutter in that case. But from a recha perspective, if it actually gets embedded in the food, then you don't have to worry about it. Then it's that's the official consensus. Of course, you don't have to worry about it in such a case. Yeah,
you're saying that you can taste the smell of salami on the bread. What about if you can smell, like, the bread smells like salami, but if you taste it, doesn't taste it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that smell and taste is just very connected. So probably if you smell it, you can taste something. I don't know. Yeah.
If someone who had COVID recently and lost their taste of smell, would it still be
usher
for them, or is it
right? Meaning, perhaps something that has a reach to it, I would think that even if you lost your sense of smell, it becomes embedded in the chetza. We have to describe it. We have two things in the oven: is that there are small particles of the isur that float in the air that land on the other item. That's why he thought that this is not, that the air up bottle is not at all reichabilis, because it's not particles of the isur that are landing on the water. They're not going into the water at all. Once the particles of isur are there, and they cannot be ignored by anybody.
If you were sitting in a trade restaurant or an office meeting, wherever it is, and you're eating a kosher food, but the whole entire restaurant smells like trip, then you can't eat your food because you're smelling trip as you're eating
the
burger.
I would imagine if you bring your food outside, you wouldn't taste anything. There's nothing embedded in the food.
Bread is here too, I think.
No, the thesis is that it is embedded in the water. That it's Or that's called being embedded in the water. That when the air bubbles, teeny tiny air bubbles that you cannot see, come into the water, at the same time, come to your mouth at the same time as the water. That means that it's embedded in the water. It can be removed from the water. Okay, that's. But in the meantime, it's embedded in the water. Maybe that's what he's going to say. I'll try to follow up. Okay. So now let's learn some Shulchan. So Shulchan Aruch writes over here in Sif Aleph that in Solim Basar Kshir and Basar Nevela, Oshel Behemet Tmeya, B'tan Recha, you should not do it. You should not bake them in the same oven. V'afal Pi She'ein Nogim Zevza, even though they're not touching each other, meaning the Chachila Recha Milsa, V'im Tzala Nereza Mutter, but if you did it, then it's going to be Mutter, says the Shat, Sif Kadim Beis, the Recha Lav Milsa, B'diavet, So the Shach right away says, oh, but when it comes to the bread that you baked in the same oven as meat, that you should not eat with milchig, because that is an issue of l'chadchila. That's still considered l'chadchila. So remember, we said that according to the Rif, Recha, at least one malach in the Rif, Recha, which is what the Shulchan seems to be asking, certainly the Shach, that Recha milsa l'chadchila, or Recha lav milsa b'diavet. So we said that according to the Rif, Rif's not going to be bothered why the bread isn't trade, because to throw out the bread would be b'diavet. But to eat the bread with milk, that's a l'chadchila question. So l'chadchila, we're going to ask him, Recha milsa. So everything is consistent with what we said, and it's basically the mahalich of the Rif. B'diavet paskin Recha lav milsa. Then he says, v'afilu v'isa asura. Even if the Isser one was very, very fatty and the Mutter one was very lean, it's still going to have the same halacha. But that's all the B'diavad.
that b'diyam reich lav milsa, even if you would think that it gives off much more reyach because the isser is so shamed, the isser is so fatty. Well, the Chachila goes on to say anyway that matanu gadol shemasu yud beis esronim. But if you have a giant oven that holds yud beis esronim, ubiv pasuach, and it has an opening, its mouth is open, mutter litzlosamo, uvulvashle yuzavzav, then even the chachila it's mutter. What's he saying? I thought we have a milsa the chachila. No, he's saying, then there won't be reyach. If the oven is big enough, the reyach won't be trapped in a small space. If the oven is big enough and open, it won't be trapped in a small space, and there won't be reyach. Or if you cover one of them, if you cover one food, then for sure you don't have to worry about reyach, because reyach is not going to transfer through a covering. He says even if you cover it with a dough, like you have those the soup dishes sometimes that come at weddings with the dough over the you ever see that, right? With the dough over the soup, right? So you have that heated up in the same in the same oven as the non-kosher food. Then you don't have to worry about it, even though it's a teeny tiny oven, and even though it's not pit pasua. So essentially what he told us is two exceptions to this rule of rekhmosu l'chatila. Exception number one, if the oven is big and vented, and I use the word vented, I use the word pit pasua, let's see if that's the same. And exception number two is going to be if one item is covered. So what's going to be critical for us is how big is a tanur gadol, meaning is the standard oven in our kitchens, for those of us who are still off gas, the standard oven in our kitchens, is that considered to be a tanur gadol? Or do we say, meaning if you're using a toaster oven, some of that's not a tanur gadol, right? But a standard oven, is that considered to be a tanur gadol? So I think we discussed it, but the Gilui Marsha, right, meaning what's the definition of a tanur gadol? So the Shulchan says yud beis esron. So the Gilui Marsha says that Nisaron is the volume of 43.2 eggs, right? That's yud beis esron kol Nisaron hu shir challah. And Nisaron, we know Nisaron. That's a shir that's familiar to us, because that's the shir challah. Mem gimel v'chomesh beitza. Shach sosim tzadi zayin. The shach already mentioned this in the end of Simon Sadi Zayi, that it's 43 and one-fifth, 43.2 eggs. That's roughly between, depending on which eggs you measure with, which beitzim you measure with, between 87 and 120 fluid ounces. Or depending on whether you use eggs or you use fingers to measure, right? That's also a big discussion, exactly, right? That was the big kasha of the tzlach. Right, the tzlach noticed a major discrepancy between the two ways that the Gemara mentions to measure liquids. There was one way of measuring by etzba'os, and the other way of measuring with volumes of eggs, and they yield vastly different results. And that led the tzlach to assume that the skatnu habeitzim, and it must be that eggs in our time are much smaller than they used to be. Because when you measure the same, what's supposed to be the same shear using fingers, that it was way, way bigger than when you measured using eggs. So we can't measure anything from a kabeitza perspective. We can't measure using our eggs, because our eggs are teeny tiny in comparison to the eggs in times chazal. So that's the tzlach's chumrah. Right, I think in Tshuva Me'avah somewhere he says, Tshuva Me'avah is the Talmud of the Tzlach, it's quoting the Tshuva all the time, he says somewhere that if you ever met the Tzlach, if you ever met the Lev Yehuda, you would know that he was a gigantic man. He was, he must have measured with his own fingers, and that's why he was so off in measurement. Which is a humorous thing to say, because he may have been a gigantic man, but he was a very smart man also, and he probably realized he was bigger than everybody else. So when he measured with fingers, he probably took an average person's fingers, right? He probably called over a guy in the base measures and said, okay, 5'9", average Jew, okay, good. He probably did it that way. He probably didn't, a little bit difficult to understand. So some people say, oh, so the tzlach holds the skatnu habeitzim. So that means our average size eggs are really way smaller than the average size eggs in times of chazal. And we know that when you go to the supermarket, average means extra large, because they only sell large, extra large, and jumbo. So average must mean extra large. So it must be that even that's not a conveyance, an extra large egg. That's what Rosh Hashanah pointed out. No, they're not. It's not just a marketing ploy. The small and the medium eggs are all sold to like the Stella Doro factory and the Antimus factory and places like that. So you know, the large eggs are probably definitely a kibbutz. But anyway, so if you multiply by 12, you take whatever nisaron is, somewhere between 87 and 120 fluid ounces, and you multiply by 12. Let's take the bigger share, right? 120 fluid ounces multiplied by 12, two. Math people? 1440. So yeah, 1440 fluid ounces, that would probably fit into our oven. The average kitchen oven, you can go search it online now, the average kitchen oven is somewhere around 5 cubic feet, which is 8,640 cubic inches. 1440 fluid ounces takes up about 2,600 cubic inches, which is way, way smaller than our ovens. So our ovens are way bigger than the volume of Yud Beis Hashrodim. It would turn out that our ovens are way, way bigger than Yud Beis Hashrodim. Rabbi Sablowski, in his Yoredei Shurim, always said, no, you need a big oven. Our ovens aren't big, they're regular. I don't know if he did a cheshbon or if he didn't do a cheshbon. When you do the cheshbon, it seems that our ovens are very big. So maybe you do the cheshbon and you only measure based on the floor of the oven and not the full airspace of the oven, which doesn't... It's not the stavir to do that, right? Because if we're talking about reach, the reach fills the entire cavity of the oven. So unless you give me the exact dimensions of length, width, the height, and everything, it's hard to know that measuring by the floor of the oven will yield a consistent result. So it seems that our ovens are big enough. Elamai, Shulchan Aruch didn't say Tanur Gadol is good enough. Shulchan Aruch said you need Tanur Gadol plus Pit Pasua. And if it's Tanur Gadol plus Pit Pasua, then you can ignore Reif. Then you're not going to have to worry about Reif. So Rabbi Reisman put from a palm that our ovens are all Pit Pasuach because they are vented. And anytime you have a vent, that's called Pit Pasuach. So based on that, our large ovens would be a Tanur Gadol with Pit Pasuach, and we automatically just solve every problem of Reif. That we'll never have to worry about Reif. But there's all oven on the bottom. Yeah, yeah, we discussed it better. But again, it's been not so mistaken to assume that it's the floor of the oven. Right, that's what I was suggesting. Maybe Rabbi Sadovsky was assuming that our ovens are small because you're measuring based on the floor of the oven rather than based on the full airspace of the oven. The Pesukei Teshuvah over here refers you there, right? Pesukei Teshuvah over here says Shemach says Yud Beis Hashrodim. Ayn Mashik Sathilal. Someone said design. Sometimes I'm the Shem Chubas Yad Eliyahu Prima God. Right? He refers you back there. So he quotes the Yad Eliyahu. The Ain Sarat She Karki Iso Shaltad Shemach Se Kol Kach. You don't need the Karkois of the oven. He says back in Simon Sathilal design in the name of the Yad Eliyahu. El She Kol Chalal Atan Or Mach Se Kol Kach. Vayim Prima Godim She Ain Daito Kein Rak. To be even shake karko is hatan or matzah yud beis hashrodim mi pas ova tefa. How do you, what do you mean the karko is of the oven? How thin is what you're putting on the karko of the oven? I'm trying to measure if yud beis hashrodim can fit in this oven. So let's say I'm just using the surface of the karka of the oven. But so if it's a very high bread, so it can fit yud beis hashrodim. If it's very flat bread, we're making matzahs. It's not going to fit yud beis hashrodim. So he says standard bread tefa. Why is standard bread a teva? Lechem apanim is teva, right? That's it. When the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not allowed to make, when the Gemara says that you're not allowed to make very thick matzahs, it says you're not allowed to make matzahs that are a teva, because that's what lechem apanim is a matzah that was a teva. Lechem apanim is not chametz, obviously, but they kept it around on Pesach, right? The Shulchan wasn't empty all Pesach, so it was most of the problems with our matzah. So but because of Kohen's reason aim, and they had a special idea of how to make it, not just to shape it in that way, but to be very careful that it should get fully baked and there shouldn't be any tefach. So that is a tefach. So the assumption is that standard bread is a tefach. Matzah generally cannot be a tefach unless it's lechem apanim. So that's what he's assuming. That's the karkoyis if it's a tefach. There's a minhag that the minute that the Mishnah Berurah quotes, thick matzahs, even potlos with teflon, not to make thick matzahs. So the whole question becomes, okay, how thick is thick? Meaning, when you get the everyone has to, spring $60 a pound on the native matzahs. Right, those are, so you need to eat like seven of them just to get a gazayit, right? Meaning like, or shots no longer exist.
The back?
Yeah. Okay, or is shots are okay? Are the smarty matzahs okay? The lots of type matzahs. Which, by the way, getting your orders right now, otherwise you're not going to be able to get your smarty matzahs. I was told that the order's got to be in like 4:40. So I got my order. If anyone wants to order, I'll send you the link. It might be too late, but it might not. Anyway, they're not cheap, but it's really gishmak. It's a good party favor to have around on Pesach. here's our matzah pizza. There's no other regular pizza. The Sephardi matzahs are thicker, but they're sort of shaftal thought pachas me etzba, you're good. And if it's less than an etzba, it's nowhere near a tefach, and that's not called thick. So there are two issues with the Sephardi matzahs, the thickness and the softness of it, obviously, is the other issue, but then we have a tradition, dafka not to do that. So again, if you assume like the Prima Gadim, then our ovens are a tanur katan. But if you assume not like the Prima Gadim, you assume like what was it, the Yad Eliyahu? The Yad Eliyahu, then our ovens are a tanur gadol, and l'chora they are vented as well. So as far as whether you have to worry about reich on the ovens, minig is to be machmir for the sheet of the Prima Gadim or the sheet of Rabbi Sabalowski that our ovens are, which I guess is the sheet of the Prima Gadim, that our ovens are small ovens. But one could make a pretty compelling case otherwise.
It's not quite though. Are you assuming that there's a maximum amount of food in there? What if you fill a big oven 70% of the way with
other food? Would that take away from the? There's this discussion in Hilchos Mezuzah like that. That if a room is supposed to be dalet by dalet amos to be chayav mezuzah, so what if there's a lot of furniture in the room? So that takes away from the dalet amos. So over here, it's the same kind of idea, right? Meaning that livable space is supposed to be dalal, but if the furniture takes up all the livable space, maybe it's not, assuming it's not furniture that you live on, and the bed does not count as that, But I haven't seen anyone distinguish that way. Food takes up the, I don't know. Then the Rambah brings up over here, it's a long Rambah. It's already different. Okay, so Benjamin, on Wednesday we'll start with Ramah, then we'll get into Zayin, then we'll get into Halach L'Maisa. Kachos Niyavish, Halach L'Maisa, microwaves and ovens and things like that. We'll be talking about that. Okay.